Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Music, dun, 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 dun. Hey, everybody, you're listening to another episode of The Command Zone. I am your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And today, we're going to talk tokens.
We are going to have a token time.
Token time, token talk. Not the kind of tokens you put into like a slot machine or a casino somewhere, no.
I do like casinos, but yeah, you're right. This is unfortunately not that. We're talking about token decks, token strategies. It's a big major archetype in EDH, and I guess we're kind of starting another meta series, as it were. We do our color wheel, we do our top 10 lists, and this will be another one where we'll probably start going through some of the major archetypes in EDH, like Voltron, like, you know, aggro, like control, and like
mono
tokens.
Red. Oh, token. Yeah, totally. Yeah, we talk a lot about archetypes in general, so it is nice that we're just gonna dive a little deeper into what it means to be in a certain archetype. And instead, because usually we focus on one general or one color pairing, just talking about the idea of tokens as a general, tokens in general, lets us broaden the subject and talk about all the colors and sort of what it works best in each color, the versatility of it, whether or not it's resilient, etc., etc.
Yeah, exactly. Just get real deep and philosophical about tokens in general as a strategy across all the colors.
Yeah. It's definitely a good strategy, I'll say that much.
It's definitely one of the core big strategies that exists in the format.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I mean, you could go to like between 1 and 10, you could go all the way to tokens to 10, or you could sort of stop it halfway through at like 5 and have it kind of be a hybrid deck. So we'll talk a lot about that too. Actually, if you guys listen to our Anafenza, the foremost deck tech, that deck was one that I bred as a sort of a hybrid token deck. So you can definitely scale the spectrum when it comes to this stuff.
Okay, so let's just dive straight into the main topic here without any further ado. What do we mean when we say token strategy? What does token strategy mean to you, Jimmy?
To me, it specifically means going wide. And when we say going wide, we mean you're not, you know, you can either be a very tall standing tower or you can be a large army that spreads out horizontally is how I like to think about it. So if you're going to be a single tower, then it's sort of a Voltron strategy. If you're going tokens, you're going wide. So you're spreading across the battlefield, sometimes literally in the game, because you're just filling up your play space with a lot of tokens. And you're trying to create a lot of creatures and to eventually swarm and overcome your opponents by usually swinging out one big swing or playing something like Triumph of the Hordes to kill them with something like Trample, because you just have more attackers than they have blockers.
Yep, I agree. That's generally what people think of when they say tokens, is just that idea of like, I don't care how big your creatures are, I just have more creatures, like a lot more.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't stop them all.
Like, I don't care that you have a 20-20 that is first strike and whatever. Like, I can just block it with one of my 100 tokens and swing out with the rest.
Yep. There are also strategies that take advantage of tokens in a different manner. So that's not the only way to go with tokens, which is one of the things I really like about token strategies in general, is that there are a lot of different ways to build it. But that's definitely the most common way.
The Zerg Swarm.
Yeah, exactly. Why do you think it is that tokens are so popular? Because we definitely see a lot of token-type strategies in our format.
For one, I think it definitely appeals to all three of the core psychographics of players. For one, I mean, going wide is something that you do in Limited, in Standard, all the time as a way to win the game. Jeskai Tokens is like a really big Standard deck right now. Yep. And because it's really effective, it's a very resilient strategy, and it's a really good way to win in a convincing fashion if you're a Spike. If you're a Johnny, it's also a great way to just have, like, check it out. I have 1,000 tokens. Like, boom, what are you going to do? I comboed off. I'm going to sack them all to do cool things, and all the synergy is going to make me feel really good. And if you're a Timmy, instead of having one giant creature, it feels good to have a billion small ones.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. It just appeals to just a large amount of personalities. So, all right, well,
and
let's talk about...
usually you win if you're really going off with tokens.
Yeah, when you go off, you generally are like, I do whatever it is I do it really big, and then I win.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the reasons that tokens are so good, because it is a very good strategy. It is very powerful. The first category we have here is versatility. So like you said, the main one is Swarm, which is just the Zerg, tons of dudes. I've got, you know, the numbers can get crazy in our format, which is what makes it fun. Like, you can literally say, like, I have 1,582 tokens.
Yeah, your arbitrary number.
Yeah, I attack you with 500, you with 500, and you with 582. You know, that's one of the things you can do. Tokens also do other things, though, like we alluded to, like sacrifice themes are really good with tokens.
Yeah. There's so many cards that it's like, hey, this card does an awesome thing, but the penalty is you have to sacrifice something to do it. And when you have all this fodder around to do it with, sacrificing is much more appealing.
Yeah, totally. So they turn a bunch of cards that normally seem like they might be bad into cards that are really, really good because you don't care about that downside of like, oh, I have to sac a creature? Well, I have 1,582 creatures. Who cares? They also fit really well into tribal strategies. This is a way that a lot of people, you know, sapperlings, zombies, soldiers, even things like elves and goblins, you can really build token decks that are also tribal decks. And as we know, tribal decks are very powerful on their own. So now all of a sudden you're sort of got two strategies going on that build on each other. You know, we call that synergy.
Yeah, that's actually really true. That's a good point. I usually see, I think the pattern is that if you're going tribal, you're focused more on the tribal elements. So you have a bunch of different elves if you're doing an elf deck, and they're different creatures. And on top of that, you'll also have a few ways to generate a lot of tokens. But there's so much synergy already that just having the elf tokens there benefits your other strategy of having, you know, like a guy that gives it all elves +1/+1, etc. So you're not entirely focused on just having elves there, if that makes sense.
Elf tokens. Totally.
Like one more.
Yeah, totally. And usually in things like an elf deck, you have all these cards that make your elves like awesome. So you got something that gives your elves all death touch, and then you got something else that makes your elves all tap for mana, and then you've got something else that gives all your elves +2/+2. And now if you've got a token that makes two elves, normally 2/1/1s aren't that good, but now you got 2/3/3 death touching Llanowar elves. Like, you know, that's when tokens can become really powerful because the synergy is so, you know, is so good.
Yeah. One thing that Marshall talks a lot about in LR too is how much of a card is something worth. So let's say something like Raise the Alarm that makes 2/1/1 soldiers at instant speed for 2 mana. That those two tokens together constitute one quote-unquote card, because tokens on their own aren't necessarily the most resilient creatures, because if you bounce one, they go away forever. If you shuffle it into the deck, it goes away forever. So tokens, when they become like those 3/3 Llanowar elves that have death touch and all that stuff, are definitely worth the card that they could be, essentially.
Yeah, so then you're getting into a situation where you cast a card that makes 3/1/1 elves. Normally that's the equivalent of a 3/3. It's kind of like worth one card. But then with all the synergy, all of a sudden you cast that card and it's actually worth 3 cards.
Yeah.
Because each one of those 1/1s is actually a 3/3 with death touch, and those are real cards. So yeah, that's a way to get card advantage because you're turning your tokens into just more value than they're supposed to be.
Which is awesome. Very good feeling.
Another thing about token strategies, and we're going to talk about this further, but there's really actually options in every single color now. So if you'll notice, we talked about sapperlings, zombies, soldiers. There, that's 3 colors right there. That's green, black, and white. Mm-hmm. You also have red that makes goblins.
Yep.
And blue has started to do things like make merfolk.
Yeah, or 0/1 like fish.
Yep. And there's all kinds. There's definitely recently been more cards in blue that make tokens. Now, blue, I'd say, is still the weakest at it, but you could legitimately build a token deck that incorporates blue now, like things like Talrand make.
Right.
So there's just more ways to do it than there used to be. So that also opens you up to all the other good things that come with each color. So if you want more card draw, you can add blue in there, but still keep your token theme. If you want more mana ramp, you can add green in there, but still keep your token theme. So there's a lot of ways to go, and it really opens up a lot of avenues to exploring different ways to utilize the tokens.
Yeah, I'd also say that blue probably can, you can probably say Thopters now with Origins out. Is definitely, although they're artifact creatures, a Thopter is definitely a blue creature. It's blue and red, but mostly I think it's definitely strongly blue.
Right, but it is making tokens. That's actually a really, really good point. And there's cards from the past that make Thopters too, so maybe a mostly Thopter token deck might even be viable now where maybe it wasn't before. So yeah, really good point. The next category we have is Resilience. So token decks are pretty resilient. I'm always amazed. You know, they can be really good against board wipes, even though board wipes feel like they would be bad against it. A lot of times, you've got all these token generators on the board, and somebody goes Wrath of God, and you're like, okay. And the very next turn, you just make 20 more guys.
Yeah. And I think that's the one thing that people think that is like, oh, you know what? I'll just board wipe when the token deck is getting out of control. But at that point, it's not just creatures that are making their tokens. They have enchantments out on the board. They have, you know, cards with flashback in their graveyard that can make more tokens. So they have lots of ways of getting back at that thing. They have board wipes that make tokens as well, you know. So definitely yep. A good resilient archetype.
Yeah, I also think, you know, token decks are very good at playing defense because the nature of what they're doing is actually just like gumming up the blocking. You know, they can block basically forever in our format. Like if you're just going to swing in with a couple of 30-30 creatures, they're just going to throw 1/1s in front of it that they don't care about. And they're basically going to be able to keep up or even surpass you by just continuing to make little dudes.
Yeah, and sometimes if your guy has like trample and is a 9/9, they'll just throw 9 tokens in front of it too. It's, you know, like there's the ability to double, triple, quadruple block is very real as well.
Yeah. And then the other thing I think that makes tokens really, really powerful is there's actually a variety of ways to win when you just have a lot of creatures on the board. So, yes, you can just attack everyone. Mm-hmm. But even in a situation where somebody's got, say, like Moat or Ghostly Prison out, there, if you build your deck correctly, you can have an alternate win condition that's like sacrifice a creature to make them mill or sacrifice a creature to do 1 damage to something.
Yeah, Goblin Bombardment comes to mind for that.
Those types of things are just alternate win cons that allow you to not have to attack with them and just say, oh, I'm going to take advantage of just having a lot of creatures. So it's very, very powerful because they stop the thing that you're doing and you go, okay, well, I'll beat you this other way because really all I need to do is have a lot of creatures and then I can find a way to victory from there.
Yeah, it's interesting too because this is actually a technique that you like to employ, which is the Ghostly Prison or Humility, stuff like that, that really tries to hose other normal decks that aren't able to go wide or kill you in a number of ways. So tokens definitely can surprise someone being like, wow, I didn't even think that was going to be a way to kill me because I thought, you know, I have these creatures out. I have this thing that says you can't attack me for whatever reason. You're like, exactly. Just sack everything.
A lot of times the Pillow Fort decks are like, I've got everything under control. I don't care. He could make 1,000,000 tokens because he can't get through this Ghostly Prison or he can't get through my Moat. And then you go, oh, yeah, I'm going to Goblin Bombardment kill you. And it's like, dang it. Or I'm going to play Purphoros and then I'm going to make 40 more guys, you know, that kind of stuff. So, definitely the resilience of token decks is a huge strength. The last thing I would say is budget. You know, token decks aren't incredibly expensive to make a good one. Now, the most powerful cards, the Doubling Seasons, the Earthcraft, the Gaia's Cradle, those are expensive, but most of the cards within a token deck are not generally going to be very spendy from a dollar standpoint.
Yeah, not to mention there are really good doubles, not to use Doubling Seasons name in the how I'm describing it, of these cards.
Yeah, good alternatives.
Great alternatives that are way cheaper. Gaia's Cradle is also like an incredible, incredible land and costs a ton of money. But, you know, you don't actually need that to really win a game. Like most token decks, if they're built right, don't need that massive amount of mana ramp. It'll do fine with whatever else it has.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, if you don't have Doubling Season, well, Parallel Lives is a cheaper alternative. There's some things that do 75, 80% of what those cards do, and you don't actually need to be working at 100% firepower to win. You know, token decks can do all kinds of stuff and still win even without, you know, a couple of the more expensive cards.
Yeah, and Primal Vigor is a card that they printed in Commander 2013 that basically doubles your tokens as well. It does it for everyone, but again, usually I don't see many, like, if one person busts out a token deck, I don't think you're going to see more than one other person at most playing a token deck, which is interesting because it's such a resilient and good strategy.
And we all the time say, like, if you look at cards that affect everybody, you shouldn't just automatically discard them. A lot of times it's okay if somebody else or a couple other players at the table are getting a nominal benefit, but you're getting maximum benefit. That's okay, too.
Yeah, it's totally okay.
Yeah.
Because, again, when it comes down to the race, you're going to be doing better. And also, you're just more well-equipped to take care, to abuse that ability. So let's say that inevitable board wipe does come. That person that gets some nominal effect out of it is not going to recover as fast as you are.
Yep. right. Okay, so let's talk about the first step sort of building your token deck. You know, it usually comes from choosing your commander. So we're obviously not going to be able to talk about every general that is potentially good in a token deck. Like, there's just too many. But we wanted to go through a few different ones, and they sort of fall into three different categories.
Mm-hmm.
So the first category is commanders that generate tokens.
Guys that put other guys on the field. The first one we've talked about a bunch, Risk the Redeemed, is actually a very expensive card these days. It's up at $20 right now. It's kind of crazy.
It's not cheap.
I mean, the card is amazing. It's Selesnya as the mana cost, so it essentially just costs one for a 1/1 elf warrior. And it has two abilities on it that you have to tap Risk to do. The first one is two and a Selesnya, so two a green or two and a white, to tap it and put a 1/1 green and white elf warrior creature token into play. And the more absurd one is for six mana, four and two green, two white, or any combination of those two. For each creature token that you control, put a token into play that's a copy of that creature. So he's like a doubling season kind of on a stick, but yes, for a mana cost.
Yeah, very, very strong, very powerful. This is probably the biggest go-to token commander. And that's what he does. He just makes a lot of dudes.
And he's pretty resilient because you can cast him for cheap again if he gets killed.
Yeah, he's a very cheap general, and you can, you know, yeah, people are going to kill him, but you're probably going to be able to just cast him again, you know, until the fourth or fifth time you've cast him. He's not very expensive at all.
Yeah.
The next one is Hazazon Tamar, who's four, a white, a green, and a red. He's a 2/4. This is another expensive card, but we're just using them as examples for the types of cards. So Hazazon enters the battlefield. You put X 1/1 sand warrior creature tokens onto the battlefield at the beginning of your next upkeep, where X is the number of lands you control. And then it says, when Hazazon leaves the battlefield, exile all sand warriors. So he can make a ton of dudes, but if he leaves the battlefield, you lose them all.
Right.
Just another very powerful, just make a lot of guys type.
Yeah, especially, I mean, if you're casting him for just straight mana, he's going to make 7/1s in your next upkeep. Now, his ability is a little less powerful in EDH because you have to wait a long time after you cast him originally.
Right.
But you can do some fun stuff. You can flicker him at end of turn to reset the number of Sand Warrior tokens that you have as well if you have more lands in play.
Yep, so totally.
He's got a lot of interesting stuff going for him.
And the next one is another big famous one is Krenko Mob Boss. This is right up your alley.
My personal favorite.
Jimmy.
How could you hate this guy? Look at him. He's just trying to be a mob boss over here.
He's doing a pretty good job, actually.
He's doing a really good job, actually. Yeah, if any mob boss had the amount of creation ability that this guy has to make his like little minions, they would dominate the world. Krenko's 2/2 red for a 3/3 goblin warrior. That's a legendary creature. You can tap him to put X 1/1 red goblin creature tokens on the battlefield, where X is the number of goblins you control. So if it's just Krenko the first time, he puts one other guy out. The next time, he puts out two, because him and plus the other guy, and then it just kind of spirals out of control.
Then he's doubling season again, except He's sort of, I mean, not just doubling season, he's making dudes every turn.
Yeah, I mean, it goes 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. I mean, it gets out of control fast.
It's like that, I don't know, there's an anecdote that they used to say where you'd like, if you took a piece of paper and you folded it in half and then folded it in half and then at a certain amount of times folded in half, it would actually, you know, reach the moon or something, you know. There's that thing where like exponentially it grows, because when you're doubling, it doesn't take very long to just get completely out of hand.
Clearly, Josh and I are both mathematicians, so please do not tell us how we were completely wrong when we say this stuff.
Google that folding in half to the moon thing, because I definitely slaughtered it. But wait,
maybe it's like your intestines. If you stretch them all the way out, they can go to the moon or something. I remember hearing something like that.
All right. Well, so it has nothing to do with folding things in half. Anyway, the point is, guys that make tokens, there's a lot of them. They're very strong. The next category is commanders that pump your tokens. So they don't actually make tokens themselves, but they make all your tokens bigger, or they give your tokens some other ability like haste.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they just want to pump you up.
They need to pump you up. The first one we've talked about many times is Elishnorn. From the recent Modern Masters set, very strong.
It's going to be the cheapest she's ever been for a long time.
Yeah, for sure. If you're thinking about building a token deck or just a deck that has white in it, then maybe good time to pick up Elishnorn. Elish Norn is a legendary creature. She's a 4/7. She costs 5 and 2 white. She has vigilance. It says other creatures you control get +2/+2. So all your tokens get bigger. It also says creatures your opponents control get -2/-2. So it gimps or just kills a lot of their creatures. Very strong. Kind of just
does a half board wipe every time you play the card.
Yeah, and the ones that are still left, their creatures that are still left, are like not very good anymore. So
yeah. Notably, this also hoses other token decks.
Yeah, it just straight up kills all their tokens, and every time they try to make a new token, Elish Norn just sits there going, no, that one's it dies.
Yeah, sorry, buddy.
Yeah, very, very strong, not just in token decks, but also very good in token decks.
Yeah, the next card is another mono-red love of mine, Urbrask the Hidden, 3 and 2 red for a 4/4, and he is a haste lord. So creatures you control have haste, and also creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. So Urbrask is really good if you're going for that all-out aggressive strategy, because any ability for your opponent to put in a creature to maybe block the onslaught of creatures that's coming their way is going to be severely gimped, because they have to wait an extra turn for those creatures to untap.
Yeah.
Which is why it's great.
And haste itself is just so strong in a token deck, because so often you have the ability to make 40, 50, 100 tokens, but then they're going to have to sit there and last through each other player's turn and hope they don't board wipe you until you get back to your turn where you can attack with them.
Yeah.
If you have the ability to give all your creatures haste, now all of a sudden you can play them and attack on the same turn, and oftentimes that'll just win you the game.
Which is pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. The last one we're going to talk about in this category is Edric, Spymaster of Trest. So this is a little different tact, and it just wanted to mention it because there are a lot of commanders out there who you wouldn't necessarily think of as token commanders, and Edric's, I think, one of those, but they do actually synergize really well with having a lot of creatures on the board. So Edric is a 2/2 legendary creature, costs 1 in Simic, so 1 a green and a blue. He says, whenever a creature deals combat damage to one of your opponents, its controller may draw a card.
This is secretly one of the best creatures in EDH, I think.
Yeah, it's very strong for a lot of reasons. First of all, it just encourages your opponents to attack each other, because no one will draw cards if they hit you.
Yeah.
But also, if you can make 12 tokens, all of a sudden you can swing in. Maybe they block 2 or 3, but you might draw 9 cards.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, so it actually synergizes really well with tokens, but it's not like exactly what you would think of when you're like, I'm going to build a token deck.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen Edric built in a number of ways. One of them is with like a bunch of unblockable creatures, so no matter what, he's going to always be drawing 1, 2, 3 cards a turn. Mm-hmm. I think the token ability here is actually way nicer, just because, for one, it's not as annoying if you just get hit for like 5 damage, and
right.
But if people pay attention to you drawing 5 cards, then you're going to be in big trouble, but... I like being able to draw more faster so that you're able to protect yourself when people inevitably turn on you for being the spy master himself.
And then the last category that we're going to talk about, so of the three categories that they sort of fall into, is what I'm calling token exploiters. Or if you go way back to one of our early episodes when we had Matt Arnold, one of the creators of VGHS, on, he talked about this philosophy for his token deck where he started thinking of the tokens as currency. And then when he thought of it that way, he sort of was looking for cards that allowed him to spend that currency. So this falls under the token exploiters category, which I thought Matt's way to think about it was really, really smart.
Yeah.
So this is ways to use your tokens besides attacking. So the first one that we have down is Savra, Queen of the Golgari. Now, Savra is... 2, a black, and a green, of course, Queen of the Golgari.
There you go.
She's a 2/2. It says, whenever you sacrifice a black creature, you may pay 2 life. If you do, each other player sacrifices a creature. She has secondary text, whenever you sacrifice a green creature, you may gain 2 life. So you can sacrifice a green-black creature, gain 2 life, and make everybody else sac a creature, so that'll actually... make you even on life, because you pay 2 life for the one ability, you gain 2 the other way. Or
you know what the perfect card is for this deck? It's in Modern Masters as well. Creekwood, Liege.
Yep, very good.
You get your black-green creatures out immediately.
Now, Savra's not actually a way to sacrifice your creatures. You need something else that allows you to sack them. But when you do, all of a sudden you get all this added benefit. So that's a way to exploit just having a lot of creatures on the board, because you can sort of just make sure nobody else can keep a creature on the board.
Yeah,
and you can control your life total.
Yeah, that's really nice. Especially the instant speed. Also, like, the ability to just have an edict on a stick, aka make everyone sacrifice a creature, is incredibly good.
Yeah, very, I mean, very strong.
I mean, you just put this with another card that does it already, like Dictate of Erebos, and you've got everyone sacrificing two creatures every time you sack one. I mean, you build this deck around sack outlets, and I think that's a really fun kind of deck to build. I mean, actually, looking at a couple of these cards, I kind of want to build one of these decks.
That's how you know the strategy is really good. I mean, you can just automatically hose Rafik-type decks, Xu Yun-type decks, any deck that's going to just make like one big threat.
Yeah.
Are just going to be in really big trouble because you can just always, like, they play their commander. Okay, I sack a creature. Now you got to sack a creature. And they're like, crap, I only have one. You know, it just really, really hurts decks like that. And they are very prominent in our format.
Yeah, it's a real hard lockdown. Unless you're playing Sigarda. Yeah, another great token exploiter that I think actually is probably one of the highest hate generating cards that you could flip over as your commander would be Purphoros, God of the Forge.
Yes.
We all know what this guy does. He's 3 red for a 6/5 enchantment creature. He's a god, of course. Indestructible. If your devotion is to red is less than 5, then he's not a creature. But basically, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Purphoros deals 2 damage to each opponent. Make 10 tokens, deal 20 to everyone. You're probably going to kill someone. And for 2 red, you can also give your creatures fire breathing +1/+0 until end of turn. So it's
It's not fire breathing. It just gives all your creatures +1/+0. So it is very strong with tokens too.
Right. It's like worldwide fire breathing. They all get to join Purphoros at the Forge and hammer out some flames.
Yeah, that's. I think that secondary ability is actually underrated because Purphoros wants you to make a lot of creatures because that deals damage to everybody. And then, well, if you've got a lot of creatures, you might as well pump their attack power.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like that alternate win condition for Purphoros. Like, if you can't kill them, or if someone's like stopping you from making too many tokens, you can just start swinging in for a lot of damage as well to either finish them off or get that last little bit of damage in.
Yeah. Of course, you know, there's those three categories, and that's sort of an oversimplification. Like, a lot of commanders have their sort of foot in one or two of these categories at the same time, so they're actually covering multiple bases. Like, a really good one is Prosh, Sky Raider of Kerr, who we did a whole deck on, again, with Matt Arnold. So that was the deck he was talking about when he was talking about spending his tokens as currency. Prosh is 3 black, red, and green for a 5/5 flying dragon legendary creature. Of course, when you cast Prosh, put X01 red kobold creature tokens named Kobolds of Kerr Keep onto the battlefield, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast Prosh. So it actually scales when you're paying the commander tax. Oftentimes you will want to get Prosh killed so you can cast him again for even more mana to make more kobolds. And then it also says, sacrifice another creature. Prosh gets +1/+0 until end of turn. So Prosh is actually a sack outlet and a token generator and a way to spend your tokens. It's one of the reasons he's so strong is because he allows you to do so many things with your tokens just on him, and he makes tokens.
Yeah, he's the big daddy of token generators just because, I mean, the fact that he scales with commander tax is insane. And it's clearly a creature that Wizards built for commander specifically, which is why it's so nutty.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, all of the commanders from the 2013 edition, Aloro is in the same set as well. So there are a lot of really very crazy, crazy cards in these sets. So Derivi as well. Like, these are all cards that people think are slightly on the edge of being too powerful. So I for one think it's great that Wizards kind of push the power boundary here, but you get stuff like Prosh, which is like the ultimate token generating colors and just sack outlet on a stick, all sorts of good stuff. Another great creature that's also from Commander would be Gave, Guru of Spores, or Gave, as some people call him.
Gave,
yeah. I'm all about my agave sweetener, Guru of Spores. put him in my coffee every day. He is 2 Obzon, so 2 black, green, white. He's a 0/0 that comes in the battlefield with 5 +1/+1 counters on it, and you can pay 1 to remove a +1/+1 counter from a creature you control, so not necessarily has to be Gave. And you get to put a 1/1 green sapling creature token on the battlefield, and also for 1, you can sacrifice a creature to put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. So he's insane because if you think about what he's doing, you essentially for 2 mana can reset the effect by taking a creature out, putting a creature on, and then sacking it to put a +1/+1 counter back on that creature or another creature you control. But you can pair this up with Dictate of Erebos. And for 2 mana, you have this repeatable effect that you can make everyone sacrifice a creature whenever you kill a creature, because you're just sort of moving these things around. You can do it all at instant speed. Gavi is extremely good when it comes to board wipes, because you can just do a ton of stuff, trigger a bunch of abilities, and come out on top when something crazy happens.
Yeah, there's so much incremental value that can occur with Gavi out. It's pretty insane. He pairs up really well with Savra, who we talked about earlier. And yeah, like you said, Dictator of Erebos, Grave Pact, those type of effects that say when a creature dies, this happens. You can just do it over and over without losing anything except for a couple of mana. So Gavi is super, super strong. And another commander that's doing a couple of things. He's not only making tokens, he's also a sac outlet for an added effect, because you can also move 1/1 counters around to your other creatures. So it's very strong. Those are some of the best commanders because they're the versatility that they offer you.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk about the cards, some of the big token cards or the types of token cards that will go in your 99. So these are the cards that are inside of your deck. They're actually going to fall mostly into the similar categories. So we're going to start with token generators, but these are not commanders. So we divided these into two different groups. There's one-time use, and then there's repeatable. Both have their place, but we're just going to talk about a few of these cards and why we may like them or may not like them. Because a lot of times you're going to be building a token deck, and at first you're just going to pull aside all the cards that just say the word token on it, right? But
that's how I do it.
Yeah, exactly. But then you've got to narrow it down. So this is just going to be us sort of talking about how we might start to think about which cards we want and which we don't. So the very most simple token generating card, you talked about it earlier, Jimmy, is Raise the Alarm. Raise the Alarm is just one and a white for an instant. It says, put 2/1/1 white soldier tokens onto the battlefield. Red has Goblin Fodder, and there's a whole bunch of cards that are very similar to this that just make a couple of 1/1s for cheap.
Two mana for 2 power and 2 toughness kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Now, like we said, with Synergy, you can get that up there so that it's actually 2 mana for 6 power and 6 toughness. Even under that circumstance, Raise the Alarm is not the kind of card that I generally want in a token deck.
Mm-hmm.
I
agree.
Yeah, it's just too small of an effect. So when you have the ability for a card to make 2/1/1 dudes every turn, then I would almost always have that or want to have that over something like Raise the Alarm.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of cards that we'll talk about in the second bit, which is repeatable effects. But yeah, it's. I mean, you'd rather put something like Lingering Souls in there because it has flashback on it.
Yeah, at least you can do it twice.
Yeah, exactly. And you get to put flyers into the battlefield as well. Now, another card that I think our sister podcast host Ben Bateman loves quite a bit would be Master of Waves.
Yes.
Who's 3 and a blue for a blue token generator, which we don't find too many of these compared to the other colors. He's a 2/1 with protection from red, and elemental creatures you control get +1/+1. And when he enters the battlefield, you get to put a number of 1/0 blue elemental creature tokens on the battlefield equal to your devotion to blue. So however many blue pips you have on your permanents across the battlefield. However, he gives them all +1/+1, so they become 2/1s, much like him. If Master of Waves ever dies, all your elemental creatures just go bye-bye as well.
Unless you have another Anthem effect out, and if you're in a token deck, there's a really good chance you would. So actually, Master of Waves may let them stick around even if it dies. Now, again, this is a one-time use, quote-unquote, but because you're in white or blue, you might be able to flicker this guy and keep making extra guys, provided you have another Anthem effect. I would say something like Master of Waves, I'm way more likely to use than Raise the Alarm just for the chance to cast it more than once. Even then, it's not quite super powerful because it is normally just going to be like one time, make 4 or 5 tokens.
Yeah, it's also very dependent on devotion. And unless you're a very heavily blue, which is the best way to take advantage of devotion, you're not going to get tons of tokens off something like this.
Yeah. Now, white has a lot of creatures that come in with like a couple extra guys. And a lot of times those white cards have other effects like sacrifice a guy and get some effect, or every time you attack, you get another guy or stuff like that. So those cards can be good just depending. But again, one-time use, one-time generating token guys that are only making 3 or 4, not that great. Now, this next card is something I probably would put in a token deck. Secure the Wastes is a new card from Dragons of Tarkir. It's
very simple.
Yeah, very simple. It's white and X for an instant. It says put X 1/1 white warrior creature tokens onto the battlefield. So if you pay 11 mana, you'll get 10 1/1 dudes at instant speed. They're all warriors.
Yeah, so if you're playing warrior synergies, it's amazing. You can do this on someone's end step. They have pseudo haste.
Yeah, and I think that's a really strong part about it is a lot of times, like I said, you're like, I just need to make 10 guys that I can attack with right away. But it's hard to do that because a lot of token generators are at sorcery speed. Secure the waste you can do on the end step and then have the 10 guys and, like you said, pseudo haste.
Yep, and this scales really well into the later game because you're just going to have more mana. So you'd much rather draw something like this than a raise the alarm, let's say, on turn 10 when you have 9 lands out. Because
yeah,
secure
sure.
the waste means you get tons of tokens. And although raise the alarm is amazing on turn 2, more in actually constructed formats, it's just garbage later in the game. So secure the waste is good pretty much at any point in the game, even though you're technically playing one more mana than you would for raise the alarm for the equal amount of power and toughness.
Yeah, that ability to scale with the game makes it a lot stronger than something like raise the alarm.
And I would honestly pay up to 3 mana extra if it just meant that it was instant speed in EDH. It's so important to be an instant here.
Yep, and especially because when you're in white, you don't necessarily have a way to get haste. Like if you're in white-green, you know, you maybe have Concordant Crossroads and a Chroma's Memorial, but after that, like how the heck are you giving everything haste? And this is a way to sort of simulate haste.
Yeah, the final on our one-time use token generators that we're going to talk about is one of my favorite cards, but it's very hard to make work, so it's just kind of more of a dream card, a best-case scenario mentality card, which is Devout Invocation, 6 and a white, 7 mana total for a sorcery. Tap any number of untapped creatures you control and put a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying on the battlefield for each creature tapped this way. So best-case scenario, you have like 10 guys, you cast this for 7 mana, you suddenly have 10 4/4 white angel creatures. You have a way to give them haste, you're killing someone that turn.
Yeah, I think probably most of the time when you cast this card, you will win the game because you're going to make, you know, 20 4/4 flyers. You'll probably have an anthem effect or two out. You know, if you have haste, it's just over. I've won the game many times with this spell. It's just very, very powerful. And it's a win
insane.
Condition people don't see coming. You know, they might think, oh, I've got it. I've got Ghostly Prison out. I've got some other way to take care of it. I see his guys. Even if he pumps them, I'm fine. But then all of a sudden you're like, no, they're flyers and they're huge.
Yeah, it's very hard to get around a bunch of 4/4 flyers because that 4/4 body is very respectable. And it's just, it's going to trade a lot and they won't want to make those trades a lot of the time. And the big thing too is like your creatures do not die when you tap them. It's not like they're so devoutly invocated that they like sacrifice their lives and become angels. No, they just bow down, create a ton of angels, and if you do happen to untap, you have all those creatures untapped at your next turn if they're still alive.
Really good point. Yeah, it's great flavor, right? They bow, they pray, and the angels come and answer their prayers.
Pretty good. I wish that happened every time I bowed and stuck a sword out in front of me or a finger. Like, go, angel! Instead, Kiwi just runs to me.
Instead, you get Kiwi.
Yeah.
Well, she's cute.
Yeah, she's super cute. Just wants food all the time. I don't know. I'd rather have a 4/4 angel, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like I would too.
My dog cannot fly.
Okay, so now let's talk about the repeatable token generators. The first one that we pulled aside was Kazandu Tuskcaller. It's 1 and a green. It's a level up creature. So you pay 1 and a green to level it up, and then it will slowly increase in level. It's from level 2 to 5, you can tap it and make a 3/3 elephant. And then from level 6 plus, you can tap it and make 2/3/3 elephants. This card is one of those cards that seems really good. It's like, oh, once I get this going, I just tap and make a 3/3 every turn. And then once I really get it going, I tap and make 2/3/3s every turn. I think what we find in general in EDH is that it takes so many turns to get this thing going that making 1/3/3 every turn and sort of being capped there is not that great. I mean, it's okay, but it's just not doing enough, and it's a little too slow.
Token decks, the power level is definitely there, but the speed is the issue with the card.
Yeah. Token decks don't generally win by doing this, by going, I make two guys. I make two more. I make two more. I make four more. I make six more. I make 10 more. Then I kill you. They usually win like this. I make a guy, I make 3 or 4 guys, I block your dudes, I make 50 guys, I kill you.
Yeah, or hey, this goes around the table once, I have 70 guys now, hey.
Yep, exactly. So it's just not, in general, I'm not saying it's completely unusable, but it's one of those cards that newer players are like, this is sweet, and then it just doesn't have the power level that you need to really close out games.
Yeah, and it's not to say that you shouldn't never play a card like this, because I could see this being perfectly serviceable in a deck that isn't about making tokens necessarily, but more just needs to find ways to like gum up the ground. Let's say you're just having a hard time and you need to, or you just have a way to, you know, there's just different ways that you can use the Tusk Caller that helps out your certain deck that may not be tokens necessarily. But I will say there's another level up creature in this cycle that just creates more mana, and I would much rather have that, because that opens more doors. And because you can only level up at sorcery speed, it's just hard to really justify having a creature like this on the battlefield, because it's cool to make 3/3s, but in a deck where you're trying to go big and wide fast, 1/3/3 a turn is not going to get you there, unless you have tons of untap abilities and all that, but then that's just a different kind of deck.
Yeah, that's what I think exactly. You really need to untap the Tusk Caller a lot of times to make it work, and like you said, then you're just not playing a token deck, you're playing an untapped deck, you're playing a Tim deck.
Yeah, I love Tim decks. I'm just still trying to build mine, but it's a lot of fun. Another repeatable effect is Bitter Blossom. Now, this card is insane in Modern and Standard and Limited.
Limited, it's just unbeatable.
It's pretty unbeatable. Yeah, it's one in the black for a tribal enchantment, and at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose one life and put a 1/1 black fairy rogue creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Whoa, that seems really good, right? But it's not great if you think about it. The nice thing that you might look at this and be like, I have 40 life, I lose one life and put a 1/1 black fairy in, no big deal, I can do that all day. The sad part is you're only making one a turn. And when when you pass the turn, then when that person passes the turn and it's your turn again, it's great. When you pass the turn and wait four turns and then you get 1/1 out of it, eh.
I mean, it's okay. I would maybe run this depending. It's also not a super cheap card, which definitely takes away from it.
Correct.
The life loss is real, because by the time you make 5 or 6 of them, it has hurt you. Now, if you're in a tribal deck where fairies matter, then I would be more apt to run it. If I wasn't running tribal fairies, I probably wouldn't. I mean, we've talked about this before. I literally think Awakening Zone, which just makes 0/1 Eldrazi spawn tokens, is better than Bitter Blossom most of the time.
Yeah,
because
I'd agree with that.
The fact that they're 0/1 and on the ground is actually not that big of a deal, because you're just waiting until you have 50 things anyway. And the fact that you can sacrifice the Eldrazi spawn for extra mana is huge.
Yeah, and that's really what you want to do, is be able to ramp into the big stuff that wins the game. And Bitter Blossom is, let's say you have a meta that's just super about throwing huge flyers at you, then Bitter Blossoms could be amazing, because you could just always have that nice 1/1 flying blocker. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's relevant. But it's not relevant because it's not good if you're trying to go wide fast.
Yeah,
it'll help you get there, but it's not the best way of doing it.
Yeah, it's just rarely going to be the thing that gets you the 50th token that's going to attack people.
Yeah, exactly.
The next one is Dragon Brood Mother. This is something that we wanted to mention because it has specific wording, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says, at the beginning of each upkeep, put a 1/1 dragon creature token with flying and devour 2 into play. Devour, let's not worry about it. The fact that it says at the beginning of each upkeep, put a 1/1 flying dragon creature, that's the part. Now, there's many cards that create tokens that have wording that says at the beginning of your upkeep, and there's a few that say each upkeep. This works like Prophet of Krufix. That means if there's 5 players at the table, you're going to get 5 1/1 flyers every rotation of the table.
Yeah.
It's
That's
crazy.
Just absurd. Yeah. I would actually recommend you just go into Gatherer and look up the words each upkeep and see what cards pop up, because for the most part, there are some powerful things that do this, because each upkeep in Commander, they didn't write this card with multiplayer in mind.
Yeah, totally. It's sort of like a loophole in the rules. So there's a lot of cards like this. I would definitely look for them. They are very, very strong, because the amount of value you're getting is just huge.
Do your research, make some sweet, sweet cards pop into your brain. Another really good card that does at the beginning of upkeep stuff would be Assemble the Legion. However, it is not each upkeep, womp womp, but it's Boros. And actually, we talk about this in some of our Color Wheel episodes, but Boros is actually, it's all about the military and all about sort of organized soldiers and stuff, so having tokens in these colors is very sort of an obvious flavor win. Assemble the Legion is 3 red and white, and at the beginning of your upkeep, put a muster counter on the Assemble of the Legion, then put a 1/1 red and white soldier creature token with haste on the battlefield for each muster counter. I keep thinking I'm saying mustard. because the card's gold and it's yellow. So you get to put a 1/1 for each muster counter on Assemble the Legion. So this spirals out of control faster than Bitter Blossom. I will say this is better than Bitter Blossom in some ways, because you get one, then you get two, then three, then four, then five. And those add up to be a much larger number than just 1/1/1/1/1.
And they naturally have haste. It's crazy. If you've had this out for five turns, you've literally taken over the game. If they don't get rid of it after the fifth turn, you're just gonna win. Making 6/1/1s plus every turn that have haste is almost impossible to deal with. This is even playable in decks that aren't token decks, just for like, I'll play it, and if you don't stop it pretty soon, this will win all by itself.
Yeah. It does take over the game, and it does so in a way that is kind of innocuous, because when you're putting out two, no one's really looking at you. When you're putting out three, you may raise one eye or two, but if you're not even really swinging at people with it, and it's just on one dice, you know, it's not like you're putting out physical tokens for each one, you can kind of get away with some dirty stuff.
Yeah, you can really surprise people.
I guess we could do a whole episode on how to potentially play in a way that is obvious that you're doing stuff, but also not obvious.
The last one in the repeatable token generators that we're going to talk about is Luminarch Ascension. So it's 1 and a white for an enchantment. It says, at the beginning of each opponent's end step, if you did not lose life this turn, you may put a quest counter on Luminarch Ascension. So on each player's turn, if they end their turn and you didn't take damage, you put a quest counter on it. Then you can pay 1 and a white to put a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying onto the battlefield. You can only activate this ability if it has 4 or more quest counters on it. This card is insanity.
This is a 5-player game. You play this on turn 2 and no one's hitting anyone for a full rotation of the table. You get to start putting out 4/4s.
I mean, they're probably not, because probably on turn 2 nobody has anything, so they don't even have the ability to hit you.
Yeah, this card is absurdly powerful, especially even if you can take care of it after two rotations, if the person just has 6 mana, they're like, all right, I'll just make 3 more 4/4s, and then it disappears.
Yeah, and if you don't get rid of it, all of a sudden they're making, on turn like 4 or 5, you know, they can have like 6, 8, 4/4, you know, flying angels. Like, that just wins. That wraps up the game so fast, it's kind of insane. This card is one of those cards that people that know EDH really well, if you put it out and they don't have a destroy enchantment, then they'll just start killing you, because it draws hate like Rafik does if they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you can just start swinging at people for like 16 in the air after turn 3 is very, very scary.
Yeah, super, super, super strong.
Yeah, some other repeatable token generators that we won't talk about, but you can just look up. Sacred Mesa makes a bunch of Pegasuses.
Yep.
Pegasi. Mobilization makes Pegasuses. Mobilization makes a ton of soldiers. Dragon Roost makes a lot of dragons. There are cards in every sort of color that does this. You can even just Google the words repeatable token generator EDH, and you'll find a big list of them on some forum somewhere.
Yeah, and you could probably tell that definitely we lean towards repeatable token generation over one-time use, but your deck will want some one-time use stuff. You will want the ability to surprise everyone. Secure the Wastes types of cards are very, very good, just to give you that extra oomph that they don't know to calculate, that allows you to win at a moment when they're not ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. Don't write off the Devout Invocations just because they're one-time use and sorcery speed. Those can be your win conditions as well.
Yeah, you just don't want a ton of those. You want your deck to be mostly repeatable with a few surprise one-time use. So the next category, the same as the commanders, is token pumpers. So token buffers, stuff that makes all your tokens big. The most famous of these is Overrun. Again, I won't get into it too much, but it just pumps all your creatures and gives them trample, and it's a one-time use spell. It's in green. So
yeah, Overrun, Overwhelming Stampede, there's tons of cards that do stuff like this.
Fortify, even cards, there's just tons. Red, green, Trumpet definitely Blast. And yeah, white are the big ones that do this, but this is just like a sorcery speed, sometimes instant speed, just boom, all my stuff's big, I attack.
And usually trample is the key word here. That's the big one that wins the game for the most part, because people can block stuff, but if you're able to trample over and just deal the rest of the damage to them, that's usually how you get through for the lethal.
Yeah, although if you're not in green and you can't give trample, then that just means you just need a few more tokens when you attack, which is usually totally doable.
Yep.
The most famous one is probably the next guy. You can go ahead and read it.
Crater Hoof Behemoth, Big Daddy Froggy over here, 5 and 3 green, 8 mana total for a 5/5 with haste. Those stats kind of suck. But however, when Crater Hoof Behemoth enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain trample and get plus X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. If you have five creatures, everything's plus five in trample. If you have eight creatures, that is enough to kill anybody.
And you're in a token deck. Sometimes you're going to have 40 creatures. That kills this everybody.
This scales insanely well when you have a bunch of tokens. That's why it's so good.
Yeah. Crater Hoof's probably one of those ones that every single person has heard a story about, a person who's like, I did this, and then I did this, and then I cast a million tokens, and then I cast Crater Hoof, and I calculated it, and it was 172,854 damage. You know, we've all heard those stories. He, she, toad, frog, whatever, just leads to those kind of blowouts.
Yep, just straight up win you the game, hardcore.
One other thing I wanted to mention, because you don't really think of it as pumping your tokens, but it can be, is effects like Relentless Assault. So Relentless Assault is a sorcery. It's 2/2 red. It says, untap all creatures that attacked this turn. After this main phase, there is an additional combat phase followed by an additional main phase. So you get two combats. That's another way to pump all your tokens, because you just get to use them all twice.
Yeah, a lot of cards do this. There's some enchantments to do. The Scourge of the Throne does this.
Yeah.
Sometimes this is the win condition, because there are so many points when you're like, I would swing out right now, but I wouldn't be able to kill everyone. Well, Relentless Assault is exactly that kind of win condition, where it's like, oh, I get to do it twice? Okay, then three people are definitely dying this turn.
Right.
As opposed to just one and a half or whatever.
Yeah, then that half sucks, because you're like, half does nothing.
Yeah, and that person is like, all right, well, I guess I just try and kill you, or hopefully I have a board wipe, etc., etc.
So now the repeatable token pumpers, or the sustainable ones. Another one we've talked about many times is Coat of Arms. So Coat of Arms is a little bit complicated. I'm going to read it. Stay with me here. It's 5 mana for an artifact. It says each creature gets +1/+1 for each other creature on the battlefield that shares at least one creature type with it. So if you have, let's say you've got 3 goblins, there's each goblin has 2 other goblins that share a creature type with it, so each of them get +2/+2. So you basically you take all of one tribe that you've got, or whatever tribes you have, and then you -1 from it, and that's how many they get plus to their power and toughness. So sounds complicated. If you have 7 goblins, they all get +6/+6. Pretty easy. This actually does it for your opponents as well, so there is a slight downside, although probably your opponents aren't making 50 creatures every turn.
They're playing tribal.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just a very good card. Usually you just go Coat of Arms, attack, win.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you have 8 out, then they're all +7/+7. It's just, I mean, it scales well with the more tokens you have. It's kind of similar to Obelisk of Urd, except that's just a static +2/+2 to all your creatures. So Coat of Arms is nice. You can, even that turn, let's say you only have 5, it's like, well, I'm going to make 5 more with Krenko. They can't attack this turn, but it doesn't matter, because it makes all my other guys +4/+4 on top of the +5 or whatever they were already, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And of course, all of the lieges, L-I-E-G-E, these were all kind of reprinted in Modern Master. At least a lot of them were. There's Creekwood Liege, there's Wiltleaf Liege, there's Glen Elendor Liege. These are all 2-color pairings, and they're all extremely powerful because they all are lords. So they give other creatures that share a color with them, black or green for the Creekwood Liege, +1/+1. And Creekwood Liege in particular is incredibly powerful, because at the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a 1/1 black and green worm creature token onto the battlefield. But Creekwood Liege gives it a buff because it's black and green, so you're putting out 3/3s every single upkeep.
Pumping all your stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're usually very well-costed bodies, like 4 mana for a 4/4, etc. And they are so good because you need a lot of these kinds of effects like Coat of Arms or Obelisk of Urd in your deck to make your deck be able to swing in and win in that big flashy turn.
It is very fashionable to win, though.
I guess so. You're fashionably right on time to the party in this case.
Winning never goes out of style. The next one is a very important one. It's also a little bit spendy. It's Akroma's Memorial. It's 7 mana for an artifact. It says creatures you control have flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, haste, and protection from red and black. This is very important, mostly for the haste, actually, because if you don't have red, you have very few ways to give all your creatures haste, and Akroma's Memorial is one of the few ways to do it. Also, it gives flying and a bunch of other stuff that does happen to matter, But yeah,
First Strike Vigilance Trample Haste is insane.
Yeah, and the protection from red black does come up. Usually there's at least one player at the table where you're like, well, my dudes are just unblockable to you now.
Yeah, exactly. You're not really worried about red burning out any of your creatures or black, you know, kind of killing them all. You're worried more about white board wipes. So having just that protection is really to get through blockers.
Yeah.
There's also Cathar's Crusade, which is one of those another one of those cards that just gets straight out of control. He kind of does what Micaeus the Unhallowed does. Is it the Unhallowed? Micaeus the Lunark, sorry.
Right.
Where he gets to put +1/+1 counters on a bunch of stuff. Cathar's Crusade is a 5-drop, 3/2 white. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So if you have a guy that's staying there from the beginning of the game, he's going to have a bunch of counters on him. And if you play Raise the Alarm, you get to put +2/+1/+1 counters on every single creature you control.
Including the Raise the Alarm tokens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what's really crazy is when you do something like Secure the Wastes, all 10 come in at the same time, and they all generate all these counters for all the rest of them. That's another thing where you put out Cathar's Crusade, and then the next turn on the end step, you cast Secure the Wastes and make 12 1-1s. They all get a ton of 1-1 counters, and then they have Virtual Haste, and you can attack and win. Cathar's just allows for some crazy Craterhoof Behemoth-style attacks.
And it gets out of control. The 5 mana to pay for it is really negligible when you're abusing tokens in the way that you should be with these kind of decks.
And the last one in this category that we're going to talk about is Aggravated Assault. So it's actually just the repeatable version of Relentless Assault.
Mm-hmm. It goes infinite with Savage Vent Maw, by the way.
Yep. It's 2 and a red for an enchantment. It says you can pay 3 and 2 red, and then you untap all creatures you control. After this phase, there's an additional combat phase, followed by an additional main phase. You can only play this anytime you could play a sorcery. So it just gives you extra attacks for every 5 mana you spend. It's exactly Relentless Assault, except for it just stays on the table and continues to do it as many times as you want.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yep.
And that does it for what we're talking about for token pumpers. There are lots and lots of cards that do this, and they're all very flexible. Triumph of the Hordes, again, is one that we talked about that specifically gives infect to your creatures as well. And that's just a win condition. If you're missing a win condition, you can even put a token pumping kind of card into a deck that isn't necessarily trying to go too wide, because if you're able to just get in for that extra, 10, 15 damage because of a card like this, then that could be enough to just win you the game on the spot.
Totally.
All right, let's talk about some token exploiters. So we mentioned this a little bit earlier, but essentially ways that you can use your tokens or just have cheap ways to throw them away, and you turn them into something better. So you're essentially trading them away, like a 1/1 that does nothing for something that's even awesomer. Diabolic Intent is one of the more expensive tutors for black, but for one in the black, as an additional cost to play Diabolic Intent, you have to sack a creature, and then you get to find any card and Demonic Tutor it into your hand. So it's Demonic Tutor, but essentially with the additional quote-unquote downside of you have to sacrifice a creature to use it. But, in a color like black, you want stuff going to the bin. In a token deck, you just don't care if those cards die. It's a very good interaction.
Yeah, it's just basically in a token deck, it's the same as having a second Demonic Tutor. It's a little spendier. It's around, $8 or so, but
yeah,
very good. The next one is Cultural Exchange. So this is a sorcery in blue. It's 4/2 blue. It says, choose any number of creatures target player controls. Choose the same number of creatures another target player controls. Those players exchange control of those creatures. So you say, oh, you've got 5 dudes. Well, you can have these 5 sapperlings. And yeah, I'll take your Avacyn and your Kalia and your Scourge of the Throne and, a couple other guys.
It's a cultural exchange.
Yeah.
You're going to learn tons about each other's
this
cultures.
This is great.
How would you feel if I murdered you with your own culture? Actually, you don't want to do that because then you lose control of the creatures.
yeah, if they die, that's right. You want to kill somebody else. But it's very strong. It also doesn't sit there with an enchantment on it that they can remove to get their creatures back. Those creatures are just yours unless they flicker them or unsummon them or something. This is a super strong card in a token deck.
Yeah, next up is one of my favorite board wipes, Retribution of the Meek, 2 in the white. It's a sorcery. Destroy all creatures with power 4 or greater, and they can't be regenerated. So this is as much of a one-sided board wipe as you can get when it comes to token decks because, if you do it at the right time and your tokens aren't super massively pumped up, you get rid of everything, almost everything pertinent on the board, and then you have all these 1/1s that are now free to roam around.
This is the type of thing most people wouldn't think of as a way to exploit tokens, but it is because you're exploiting the fact that you have a bunch of little dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's move into the repeatable area. The first one up is Ashnod's / Phyrexian Altar. So Ashnod's, you sack a creature, you get two colorless mana, or Phyrexian Altar, you sack a creature and you get one mana of any color. They're both artifacts. So they just sit there on the table and you can now turn your creatures into mana at the cost of sacrificing them.
Yeah, this is the cleanest sort of conversion, right, from creature to mana that you can get. And that's why these are absolute must put in for any token deck. You have to have both these cards in there.
Yeah, they're amazing. We're always talking about every deck needs card draw and mana ramp, but what you really want to do when you're really cooking is you want your mana ramp to also synergize with your deck. You don't want it to just be a mana rock if you don't have to. And Ashnod's Altar and Phyrexian Altar are mana ramp that take advantage of having a lot of creatures on the board, so they synergize.
Yeah, so there's a card like Skullclamp, yep, which is banned everywhere, pretty much, except for EDH, which means it is super powerful. It's a one-drop artifact. They reprinted it in Commander. They want you to have this card. Equipped creature gets +1/-1, and whenever equipped creature dies, draw two cards. Now, originally, it's also an equip cost of one. Originally, R&D was like, oh, no, it was supposed to be +1/+1, and whenever equipped creature dies, draw two cards. They made a mistake with this card. They made it -1 because they're like, we need to make this have a downside. What they didn't realize is that this just outright kills any token that's attached to that's 1/1.
Yeah, now you don't have to go through the process of getting that token killed. The skull clamp kills it.
Yep, and you immediately draw two cards for one mana. So you can just clamp your entire team and draw so many cards because of it. Drawing two cards, it's nuts.
It's often the single most powerful card that you can draw in your token deck because it just gets you the gas you need to, you know, do whatever you want in that game.
Yeah, in your Shadowborn Apostles deck, this is like the only equipment you have in there.
And I literally run Steel Shaper's Gift, which is a tutor for equipment, even though I only have one piece of equipment in the whole deck because it's that powerful.
Yeah. And in a deck like that, you kind of need every little edge you can get to try and win against other quote-unquote real decks.
Yeah, that's true. The next one is Goblin Bombardment. We mentioned it earlier. This is an innocuous little card that ends up being insanely powerful and winning a lot of games. It's one and a red for an enchantment. It says, sacrifice a creature. Goblin Bombardment deals one damage to target creature or player.
Hey,
so I don't care if you've got...
It's as flavorful as it gets. They stick the goblin in the giant crossbow, and then they just fire it at something, and the goblin dies along the way, but it does one damage.
Yep, it smacks them. It's very strong because when they get those sort of stabilizing forces out, they get their ghostly prison out, they get their moat up, you go, oh, well, I'll just sack 10 dudes and deal 10 damage to your face. And you can just finish them off that way. It's very strong. Also, it has the versatility to be able to kill creatures when you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's so many X1s out there that just die. Your pinger deck against Goblin Bombardment or like Goblin Sharpshooter is just, oh no, that's like the last thing you want to see against you. Also, I love the flavor text, which is one mog to aim the catapult, one mog to steer the rock. And the art, they're literally chained to the rocks that they're just going to... It just doesn't make any sense as goblins. Like, why don't you just shoot the rock? You don't need something on it to steer it. But you know what? If it's a sack outlet on the stick and one of the best cards in a lot of my decks, I don't care.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and it's great because it does get around stuff like moat and stuff, because it's like, hey, do you have protection from enchantments doing you damage? Didn't think so. Is it combat damage? No, it qualifies as specifically weird card-based damage that you're just not going to be able to get around. Like Chiron Negotiations, 2/2 red for an enchantment. Tap an untapped creature you control. Chiron Negotiations deals one damage to target player. So it doesn't do creatures in this case, but you're not sacrificing your creatures either to get this effect to happen. This actually is a really sweet card, I think, just because for two extra mana, one of them is you do have to play two colored red for it, but you're able to repeatedly reuse your creatures to do a ton of damage to people.
It's very, very strong. It's also the way that it's worded. You can use your creatures at haste speed because it's actually like a downside. Tap and untap creature you control. It doesn't give them the ability to tap and do this. It's like the Kieran Negotiations taps them. So if you have Kieran Negotiations out, a lot of times you can do something like, again, secure the waste for 15 and then tap all those guys to do 15 damage directly to somebody.
Yeah, and then untap and do another 15.
Yep.
It's if you're doing it on an end step.
Very, very good point. That's a lot of damage and totally doable on turn, 8 or 9.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. this card's scary. Why haven't we seen this around the table more often?
Yeah, I don't know.
Tell our playgroup about it, Josh.
I have it in my token deck, but I just haven't drawn it that many times, and I don't play my token deck all the time, so we just haven't.
This is also a great way to have negotiations at the table, because someone can be like, hey, I don't know what to do, or like, I'm going to swing at you and be like, if you do, I can actually just kill you right now.
Yeah.
Your life hangs in the balance because of me, and I can choose at any point to end your life, so you should do exactly what I tell you to do, or don't swing at me, go at someone else.
The next card is Earthcraft. This is a spendy one, very powerful. It's similar to Kieran Negotiations. It's one and a green for an enchantment. It says tap an untap creature you control, untap target basic land.
So the basic land bit is a little less pertinent in EDH because a lot of decks run a lot of non-basics, but if you're in mono green or a two-color deck, this is insane, especially with tokens. You just get to double your mana a lot of times.
You only need to have one basic land to make it worth it, though, because you can just untap it with one creature, tap it, then untap it with another creature, tap it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't think about it like that.
So you can just generate so much mana. So again, if you have something like Secure the Wastes, you can make, instead of 12 instead of 12 guys, you can maybe make 20 or 30, depending on how many creatures you already have in play. Like we've said many times, token decks are generally like, hang around, make 80 guys on one turn attack you. And stuff like Earthcraft helps you get there, because usually to make 80 guys, you just need a lot of mana in one big burst.
Yeah, that's very true. I guess the final card we'll talk about in the Token Exploiters segment is the wonderful, the incredibly powerful, and the card that makes you essentially not play any cards in your hand, Aura Shards.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. One in green and white for an enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may destroy target artifact or enchantment. And guess what? We have a lot of in this game of EDH. Both of those things. Again, raise the alarm with this. You get to kill two artifacts or enchantments for a total of 5 mana with Aura Shards plus raise the alarm. That's the power level is out of control. Secure the Wastes for like 14. You can just wreck every single thing on the board at that point.
In a token deck, honestly, like, usually if you get Aura Shards out, just nobody else gets an enchantment or artifact. Like, they just can't have
them. Yeah, they're too scared.
I mean, you're going to destroy every one pretty fast, and then if they ever put one out, you're creating multiple guys every turn, sometimes 5, 6, sometimes 10 guys. I mean, the board state just can't keep up with that.
Yep.
Yeah, very strong. Obviously, we can't talk about every card in all these situations. Again, there's a lot of things. Grave Pact, Dictate of Erebos, another big one that fits in this category. There's a ton of stuff that just reward you for having a lot of creatures in play. So we're going to move on, but there's a lot of things.
Move on.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've discussed quite a bit here today. And again, the internet is your friend. A lot of people have had lots of in-depth discussions about tokens and how to make token decks and how to best use them. And this is something I found is really fun to just experiment with. There's lots of different ways to exploit tokens. Find something that you like. For instance, Convoke is a mechanic that's returned recently to Magic, and Convoking is an incredible way to exploit your token usage.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of fun ways, fun stuff you can do there.
One interesting thing I noticed while we were putting this list together is just, if you know the color pie, you know, going back to our color wheel series, you can often see some ways that the color pie affects how you might want to build your token deck. If you're paying attention as we were going through, you'll notice that, like, white and green, for instance, they sort of have a lot of the swarm and mass pump effects. Whereas, like, black sort of prefers using their tokens to sacrifice. They don't have as many of them make my guys all big. You know, blue also falls into that category. So you can sort of ride the color wheel to sort of determine how it is that you want to build your brand of token deck.
Yep, definitely. And we talk about a lot of this as well in our color wheel series about how the allied colors work and the enemy colors, color pairs work. And yeah, they definitely influence the kind of token deck you might make. Although if you're like Josh, you'll probably just do a 5-color one and get a little bit of everything.
My token deck is actually not 5 colors; it's only 3. So it's white.
So you're saying
green
it's
and
unfinished?
Red. Yes, it's, I'm saying that pretty soon I'm turning it into a token. No, just kidding. The last point is sort of one of the big points about making a token deck that you run into, and we've talked about this in a few other episodes, but we'll bring it up here. It's sort of the big question when you're sort of, I don't know what the word, when you're choosing your ratios, as we like to say. So you come up upon this question, which is like, I have token generators, and then I have pump spells, and then I have exploiters, and in what ratio should I have these things? And what we've said in the past, and I think is very true, is that err on the side of more token generation and mm-hmm. less of the other stuff. Because if you think about it, what happens if you have an opening hand that has all token generators and then you draw four token generators in a row? Well, that's okay.
You just have more tokens.
It's not ideal, but yeah, you're going to just have a bunch of creatures on the board. Now, let's say the opposite happens. You draw an opening hand, it has all pump spells and no token generators, and then you draw three or four pump spells in a row. Well, that sucks, because pump spells don't do anything without tokens, so you would much rather have a lot more token generators and a lot less of the other stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and the other stuff is sort of more your win condition in general.
Yeah, and I know some people are against tutors, but tutors essentially are your second pump spell when you need to find it. You know, you'd rather be able to find either a token generator or a pump spell. You don't necessarily want to draw your opening seven and have six pump spells, you know, and one token generator. Well, hopefully you have some lands in there too, but
good point.
Yeah, what Josh is saying is right. You definitely want to err on the side of more token generators because, again, this is a deck that is very vulnerable to big board wipes if you're not able to recover from them. And you also want to be able to know, like, hey, you know, maybe I don't need to play all of these out right now. I can hold a couple back just in case. And that's why token generators are more important just in general.
All right, very cool. So we're just scratching the surface here. We'll probably do a deck tech on a token deck maybe next episode. Who knows?
And who knows?
I'm sure we'll talk about this in the future for sure. It's just a very big pillar of our format.
Yeah, and let us know if there's an archetype series that you are just dying to hear about. It could have been tokens, and hey, guess what? We already did it. Haha. Or it could be something entirely different, like tribal or whatever. So let us know. You can tweet at us at JF Wong or at Josh Lee Kwai, or you can find our regular Command Zone podcast Twitter at CommandCast.
All right, ready for the end step?
I'm always ready for the end step. And by that, I mean I'm never ready for the end step.
That's okay. I'll go this time.
All right.
So this is where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I have a new podcast that I have started to listen to that I'm enjoying. It's
Traitor.
It's called I'm only allowed to listen to the Command Zone podcast.
I'd never listen to LR now.
I listen to LR, the Masters of Modern. Oh, so many. I'm not even gonna go into it. This is not Magic related though, remember, because that's how the end step works. The podcast is called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's kind of a podcast about, sometimes they're talking about crazy conspiracies that are out there. Sometimes they're talking about just other things in the world that it's like, this is something crazy that happened, but no one talked about it. You know, that kind of stuff. It's a very cool podcast. I had some time on a plane and delayed at the airport because whenever you go to the airport now, you get delayed. And I got to listen to a lot of episodes in a row. They're pretty short. They're usually around a half hour. I would definitely recommend checking out Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Just search for it on iTunes.
That's really cool. It kind of reminds me of like a BuzzFeed article title, but I'm guessing it's been around for quite a while now.
Yeah, it's been around. It's not BuzzFeed-esque at all.
Wait, well, you know what? I will check that out because I do want to learn some stuff that they don't want me to know, whoever they is.
The Illuminati, I assume.
I knew they were real. And they're hiding in all the Magic cards if you look close enough.
All right, make sure to listen to our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, with Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. You can find them on rocketjump.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at TheMMCast.
Yeah, our editor for the show is Eli Cuevas, and special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card animations. You can find them on Twitter at LivingCardMTG, or you can also just watch our videos, and it starts every video off. There's tons of really cool ones throughout the videos on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.